Hey there, superfans. This is Leslie Ann Warren, Lois Lane.
And this is David Wilson, Superman Clark Kent.
From the ABC musical, It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman.
And you're listening to Comic Book Central,
where comic books come to life.
Hey there, super fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, coming to you from my fortress of solitude, known as the Comic Book Central Lair, with a super exclusive. The conversation you will only hear right here on Comic Book Central, the reunion over 40 years in the making. In 1975, ABC adapted the Broadway musical It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. They adapted that for a TV special. Today, I'm reuniting the stars of that show, the lyrical Lois and Clark, if you will, Leslie Ann Warren and David Wilson.
Man, this is going to be good.
I know, right? They're going to be along in just a few minutes. Again, this is the reunion you will not hear anywhere else. So be sure to share this episode with every Superman fan you know. This is a rarity. I have to say, this is going to be a fun one. And thanks to listener Ernest Edwards. Ernest emailed me a little while back, said he wanted to hear the latest from the super duo from the super musical of 1975. Well, Ernest, thanks as always for writing in. Today, you get your wish, my friend. It's coming true. Now, before the Comic Book Central exclusive reunion happens, a few things to get to. First, my thanks to everyone out there who's been tweeting, emailing, trying to get the folks at Fremantle Media and ABC to get me on Match Game. Look, longtime listeners of Comic Book Central know that I obsess over that game show. It's the greatest game show ever. Got a chance to play a few rounds of it with some of the celebrities here on the show. Some of you took to Twitter. You used the hashtag Stuber on Match Game, sent that out to Fremantle North America at FMNATV, and also the folks at Match Game on Twitter at Match Game ABC. I appreciate you doing that. As I mentioned this week on the Facebook page, you can email the casting agents, castingmatchgame@gmail.com. That's on their website. They said they'll take questions. Well, ask them a question. When are you going to get Joe Stuber on the show? Let them know you want to see me on the show, matching wits with the celebrities, chatting it up with Lamont Cranston, a.k.a. the Shadow himself, Alec Baldwin. How great would that be? Get a chance to meet the Shadow, Alec Baldwin. I think my brain would explode if that were to happen. But they're going to be taping episodes very soon, so if you want to draw attention to your favorite podcast host, try to help make a fanboy's dream come true. Tweet them, email them, castingmatchgame@gmail.com. Let them know they need to get me on the show. That would be a blast if it happens. Hey, who knows? I get on the show, maybe I'll even do my Charles Nelson Reilly imitation. We'll see. All right, next item of business. Some of you know I also contribute regular comic book segments to the IndieCast at theindiecast.com, hosted by the Thunder from Down Under, Ed Dollister.
Tune in each fortnight to the IndieCast, the world's number one Indiana Jones fan podcast.
Trust me.
Featuring the latest news, reviews, and interviews with on-screen and behind-the-scenes talent who helped bring to life the greatest adventure movie series ever made. Each episode has the latest from the world of Indiana Jones, as well as interactive segments, trivia, contests, and specials, including radio dramas and music retrospectives. The IndieCast.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Available in iTunes or listen directly at theindiecast.com.
If adventure has a name, it must be the IndieCast.
I recently interviewed actor Anthony Gruber over at the IndieCast. Also, my podcast partner Keith Voss and I, we're going to be celebrating the 5th anniversary of our segment, The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones, very soon on the show. 5 years of Indiana Jones comic book reviews and interviews. It's been a blast. The adventure continues on the IndieCast. So if you haven't already, it's a great podcast to check out. You're going to want to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Check out the things I just mentioned, the things that are coming up. Also, big news coming up. The gentleman who made the legendary fan film Raiders of the Lost Ark, the adaptation, Eric Zala and Chris Strompolis. When they were kids back in the day, they used the Marvel Comics adaptation as a guide. They remade this movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, shot for shot. Some of you have seen it out there. They're touring all over the country right now with their film, as well as a new documentary about the making of their fan film. Well, that Raiders red line on the map, it's bringing them to my neck of the woods, Columbus, Ohio, to the Gateway Film Center. They're going to be showing the new documentary. It's called Raiders, the Story of the Greatest Fan Film Ever Made. That's going to be followed by a Q&A with Eric and Chris. They're great guys, by the way. Then a special screening of the film, Raiders of the Lost Ark, the adaptation. All that's going to be taking place. They're touring the country with it, but they're going to be here in Columbus, Ohio, Saturday, June 25th, starting at 7 p.m. at the Gateway Film Center. Now, you can learn all about the tour at RaidersGuys.com. That's their website. For the Columbus event, you're going to want to check out GatewayFilmCenter.org. Now, don't worry about writing all that stuff down or trying to remember it. Everything I'm mentioning to you today, you can find it in the show notes for this episode at my website, ComicBookCentral.net. That's all you really have to remember. ComicBookCentral.net, that's your one-stop shopping for everything you're going to hear on today's show. Now, on the IndieCast, you're going to hear about the national tour. I'm going to talk to the guys. But if you want to attend the event here in Columbus, Ohio, in person for free, and you're going to have to be here in Columbus, Ohio, June 25th to be able to do this, so keep that in mind. But if you want to attend for free, here's what you need to do. Go to the Comic Book Central Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network or Comic Book Central on Twitter at Comic Book CTRL. Like I said, comicbookcentral.net, all the links are there. But go to the Facebook page, go to the Twitter feed, and like the show on Facebook, follow it on Twitter. But I'm going to pin a post to each of those pages for two free passes to the Gateway Film Center in Columbus, Ohio. You have to be here in Columbus, Ohio for this. For the Raiders event, June 25th, starting at 7 p.m. So if you're on Facebook, you share that post on your Facebook page. If you're on Twitter, retweet it on Twitter. I'm going to pin it to the top so it'll be easy to find. For those listeners that do that, I will pick one of you at random, probably throw the names in the Indiana Jones fedora here in the lair. That listener will get two free passes courtesy of the fine folks at the Gateway Film Center right here in Columbus. You've got this week to share or retweet. I will announce who gets the free passes right here on Comic Book Central on the next episode, June 18th, episode 131. So if you need to do it now so you don't forget, push pause, go do it. I'll be waiting for you right here when you get back. Did all that? Okay, cool. So you got that done. That's how you get those. Now, on to today's show. As many of you listeners know, I have had some super reunions right here on Comic Book Central. Think about it. Michael Gray and John Davey from Shazam, Joanna Pang and Brian Cutler from The Secrets of Isis, Shazam's sister show, even Ma and Pa Kent, Kay Callan and Eddie Jones from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. They've all reunited right here in the lair. Well, today, Lois and Clark are here, and in 1975, they sang and danced their way through a very unique part of Superman's history. Let's learn a little bit more about that. Then, the reunion over 40 years in the making, my super exclusive with Leslie Ann Warren and David Wilson. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. The Broadway musical premiered in 1966. Music by Charles Strauss, lyrics by Lee Adams, and a story by future Superman the movie screenwriters David Newman and Robert Benton. Now, in the Broadway show, Superman battles the evil scientist Dr. Abner Sedgwick. Hey, give him credit. They didn't go with Lex Luthor like almost all the feature films did, so you gotta give points for original characters. Superman also has a second battle on his hands in the show with Daily Planet columnist Max Mencken, who has got the hots for Lois Lane. The show featured Bob Holliday as Superman, Patricia Morand as Lois Lane, Jack Cassidy as Max, show-stopping song and dance numbers, Chinese acrobats, and a Man of Steel soaring high over the stage a la Peter Pan. Now, closed after 129 performances, it received 3 Tony Award nominations, had brief revivals the following year in St. Louis and Kansas City, but then was largely forgotten for nearly a decade. But in 1975, execs at ABC decided the show could be adapted for television as part of their late-night attempt to counter-program NBC's juggernaut The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. ABC's Wide World of Entertainment featured comedy specials, documentaries, mysteries, concerts, talk shows. And on Friday, February 21st, 1975, at 11:30 p.m., legendary announcer Gary Owens introduced the singing Superman to insomniacs across the country.
Clark Kent, now grown to superb manhood, vows to use his titanic strength for the betterment of mankind. And so is created the Man of Steel. Faster than a speeding bullet.
Slowpoke.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Sorry about that, Amtrak.
Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
No sweat.
What a man!
Thank heaven for Superman!
We need him. We need him.
Now, the television version featured an all-star cast, including MASH's Loretta Swit, Kenneth Mars, David Wayne, Alan Ludden, and in the starring roles, newcomer David Wilson as Clark Kent slash Superman, and as Lois Lane, Leslie Ann Warren, well known to audiences from her breakthrough television performance as Cinderella just a decade earlier. Now, this revised version dropped a few musical numbers, discofied some others, and brought in mobsters instead of Chinese acrobats. Well, hey, this was coming right after the Godfather films. And our stars, Leslie Ann and David, brought the comic book characters to musical life in numbers like It's Superman.
Oh, how I wish I weren't in love with Superman. A wasted life is all I've got with Superman.
And The Strongest Man in the World, featuring the Man of Steel as a man of self-doubt.
Why must the strongest man in the world be the bluest man? Tell me why.
Encouraging appearance from a writer named Jerry and an artist named Joe gives Kal-El the confidence he needs for the rousing finale, where the Man of Steel mops up the mobsters in true comic book style.
Come on, pal, let's go, bam. I need a little exercise. Take that, pow, and that, zap. Let's see what you can do. You boys, pow, are good, bam. I like a crook who really tries. Come on, pow, let's go, bam. You'll learn a trick or two.
After Superman, David appeared in the riveting drama Grey Lady Down with Charlton Heston and future Superman actors Ned Beatty and Christopher Reeve. And you also saw him in Magnum P.I., Eddie and the Cruisers, The Bronx Zoo, and Wise Guy. And after stepping away from Lois's typewriter, Leslie Ann snagged an Academy Award nomination for her role in Victor Victoria, picked up a Golden Globe for 79 Park Avenue, and depending on which version you saw in theaters, may or may not be the murderer in the cult classic film Clue. Now today, Leslie Ann and David are getting back together to celebrate the silly, swinging superhero songs of 1975. Joining me on the show today, two fantastic talents. She was nominated for an Academy Award. They're both Emmy nominated. Together, they brought their musical talents to the world of Lois Lane and Clark Kent. A big welcome to Leslie Ann Warren and David Wilson. Together again, both. Welcome to Comic Book Central.
Thank you.
Hi, David.
Leslie Ann, you little Dickens. What are you doing?
It's only been 100 years. Yeah,
and making dreams happen here on Comic Book Central.
There you go.
So yeah, I just reunited Michael Gray and John Davey from the old Shazam series the other day after 40 years.
Wow.
No kidding.
Wow.
Yeah, 1960s.
Well, that's about where we're at.
That's pretty. Yeah, you guys were 75. They were 76. Was when their show went off the air. So
we beat them. We're 41.
You did.
Which is hard because I know Leslie's only 39. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's really tricky.
She hasn't aged. She's ageless. So.
Thank you.
She's the female
Dick Clark. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that because I certainly have.
We all have. Leslie Ann's the only one that doesn't.
I have. Trust me. Thank you, though.
First time you guys have been together in a while.
Yeah, here we are together apart.
I think it's since we shot it.
Like a week after or something. You know.
Yeah.
Would you like have dinner afterward or something like that?
Something like that.
couple of dinners.
Oh, we're going to get into that. Yes, I do have a
Not
question
really.
About that. Oh, we're going back through the mists of time here. So, yeah, wow, this is fantastic. So, hey, we reunited the Shazam actors. We're going to reunite the Superman actors here. As I usually do here on the show, I want to get a little bit of background on both of you, see what led up to you both portraying these iconic characters, bringing them to life. Both New Yorkers, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so both New Yorkers, ladies first, Leslie Ann. Musical background pretty early on. How young are we talking, and what was the early interest in acting, singing, dancing for you?
Well, let's see. I started ballet when I was 6, and when I was about 14, a lot of my friends were in Bye Bye Birdie on Broadway, and I used to hang out backstage with them, and I started becoming interested in musical theater. And I actually snuck off to my first audition, which was a national tour of Bye Bye Birdie, under an assumed name, and I got it. And my parents wouldn't let me take it because they wanted me to finish high school, so I thought my career was over, of course. And
what was the assumed name that you went under?
Well, I picked Lisa Robbins. Lisa for this ballet dancer that was in the professional class that I used to watch all the time, who was just gorgeous, and Robbins because of Jerome Robbins. And so it was funny, actually, when they called my name, I didn't remember the name that I had chosen. So I was sort of like, you know, whatever. Finally, I got it, jumped up and went to the audition.
Oh, man.
And then I went to music and art high school, but continued studying dancing and started studying acting and singing at that time. And then I switched over to professional children's school in New York when I was 16, turning 17. And started auditioning for real.
Okay.
And I auditioned for 6 months, for over a 6 month period for 110 in the Shade, and got the show and went into rehearsal right after I graduated from high school at 17. So
under your own name, right? You recognize
under
that
my
name?
Own name. Yeah.
And mom was okay. Well, your mom was she a ballet dancer?
No, my mother was a singer.
She was a singer. Okay.
Yeah, she was a singer in New York, and well, she's English, but she was a singer at the Copa. And I have a picture of my mother, and the awning on the Copa says Manhattan's newest dream girl, and that was my mother.
Wow. Okay, so even with the showbiz background, though, mom knew to make sure that you got your education first.
Yeah, okay. It's really important to both parents that I completed high school. And yeah.
Good parenting, right there,
yeah.
David. Okay, how about so you're. Probably not the first actor here either, from sports to acting. Initial interest was in sports.
I was actually at Columbia University back in the late 60s, and then during once the draft lottery came up, I got freed. So I wanted to be an actor. I'd always wanted to be an actor. I started my acting actually in high school. I quit. I didn't play basketball in my senior year because my sister bet me that I couldn't get a role in the musical, and I scored the lead opposite Patti LuPone.
Oh, wow. Oh, did your sister lose that bet?
Yeah, she did. It was bad. We did South Pacific together. And then, and I kind of got bitten by it there. I mean, I had been performing a lot. My mom was a singer with Paul Whiteman and, back in the 40s. And then she went into nursing for a while, and then became a mother and raised a family, but the music was always in our house. It was always there, you know. So I was really bitten by the acting thing then, and I quit Columbia, much to the dismay of my family, and I went to the neighborhood playhouse and studied with Sanford Meisner, and graduated the playhouse back in 71, and I toured with Angela Lansbury and Mame, and I did the original Joseph and the American premiere of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in Philadelphia. It opened in Philly in 73, I think, or 4. And then I just wanted to get out to California. So, I auditioned for Norman Twain and in New York, and I got the role.
Wow. Okay, so, I mean, so working with some heavy hitters on the stage right off the bat, early on, for both of you, I mean, how do you, at such a young age, That would seem to be just so overwhelming, just the audience in front of you, learning all the lines, these major talents there. You're coming up into the business. How do you handle that at such a young age?
Well, I know for me, like my first, the 110th shade, my first job was with Agnes DeMille choreographing. So for a baby dancer slash actress, it was, you know, an incredible dream come true and incredibly intimidating. You know, and all the anxiety, when I look back on it, you know, all the anxiety that I've always had somehow never stopped me from actually being brave enough to follow my heart and follow my passion and follow my training. And so, you know, going from 110 in the shade, my next job was Cinderella with, you know, Ginger Rogers.
Yeah, just Ginger Rogers,
Walter
right?
Pigeon. Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. I mean, these are icons in film history. And Jo Van Fleet, and I was a member of the Actors Studio by then, and she was, you know, an icon in that world, was, as Celeste Holm, was always intimidating to me. But somehow, you know, I when I talk to younger actors, you know, I really feel like it was my destiny, period. And it was what I was bound to do. And it didn't matter that I had enormous fear sort of as my shadow all the time. I just kept somehow pushing forward. And, you know, I look back and I think, dear God, where did that come from? But, you know, there was just this bigger need and drive to do what I have been blessed to do.
Are you just fueled by pure adrenaline at that point, David, when you're that young, kind of coming into it?
Well, you know, the thing about it is, Joe, I never ever thought about that stuff because, I mean, Leslie was kind of, it sounds like she was brought up through that. You know, I came another whole path, in terms of, I kind of got into the thing on a dare, and I never really thought about it. It never occurred to me that I didn't belong where I was taken. You know, I just I didn't know what I couldn't do, so I would do anything. I could, you know, I didn't feel like I was never inhibited by it or intimidated by it. It just seemed to me that, like, well, you just do it, you know, and if it's in you to do, and I always felt it was in me to do. And I, you know, much though, I tell you what, though, Leslie actually took me to my first voice coach, Seth Riggs.
Wow, and, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you brought me over to him when he had the place up in Hollywood Hills there.
Oh,
up on
so Superman wasn't the first time you guys met.
No, it was
was the first time we met. Actually, I had already been performing. I had worked with Angela on tour. And I had done Joseph, and I, you know, worked with a lot of great people in Joseph, you know, but I there was something in my, you know, that I was not getting to, and, you know, Seth took me to another whole level with voice, and so Leslie was really responsible for that, you know, and as a matter of fact,
I remember that.
Yeah, that was you, honey. So, yeah, she did. And it was great. And I loved working with him. And, you know, so, but I never thought about, working with Charlton Heston and Anthony Hopkins and all these different people, I just felt at home with them. I just felt comfortable with them. You know, I never felt uncomfortable. I never felt like I didn't belong. I was never intimidated by it. I just, like Leslie said, you know, at some point you just get, hey, I'm home. This is where I belong. You know, in front of the camera or on a stage.
And just feels comfortable. Yeah, and Leslie Ann, not the first Cinderella to appear on this show. We had Belinda Montgomery, who played Cinderella. On a Canadian television adaptation. She was with the Muppets. She got to play Cinderella with Muppets. So that you did not have Muppets, but you had a flying chariot at one point, too. So, and I'm thinking about, you talk about stage plays, you talk about, you know, Broadway shows, and just sort of that translating to television. Obviously, that's what we're going to be talking about with Superman. But you sort of had a taste with that then with Cinderella coming into it. What were the challenges in bringing a production, which is basically a play, onto television? I mean, the audience isn't there, the timing, timing, all those things are off.
Well, are you talking about Cinderella?
Cinderella, and then how that maybe prepped you for Superman, as we'll get into.
Yeah, Cinderella was actually written for television by Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein. So it was specifically written for television. And the way that we we did it with Charles Dubin, the director, we did it in a very serious manner. So, in other words, what I mean by that is we approached it not as a sort of fairy tale or, you know, we approached it as something real. And I think that that's why in that particular case it had such such a longstanding legacy with people who tuned in every year to watch it, and it became this sort of classic, you know, experience in their homes and families. Superman was very different, I think, because it was a spoof on material that is already, you know.
I was probably thinking more of set construction, because they both seem to be a little minimalist in their approaches on the sets.
Ours was really minimalist.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Biggest difference between stage and TV was budget.
Yeah,
exactly. I was so young. I was 18 when I did Cinderella. So everything to me looked incredible. Mm. You know, it was all so magical. By the time I got to do Superman, it was definitely much more of a bare bones production, you know, than...
Well, you know, I always looked at it as kind of a quiche piece, man. You know, it was really meant to be a comic book page, you know.
Yeah.
And I've seen it since. I never saw it, you know, originally, except in the screening that we saw that one time, I guess, at the studio at Selznick, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, and at that point, I didn't know what it was. But in time, I got to take a different perspective on it. And it was a comic book. It was a musical comic book.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think, too, putting it into perspective, too, because we, you know, it's on YouTube and people can watch it now and you look back and all these different things. But at the time, really only the Batman television series, like Wonder Woman hadn't even premiered yet. Linda Carter's Wonder Woman was months away, so there wasn't even that as a reference point. It was more of the Biff, Bam, Pow, the campy nature. Obviously, you know, the Batman series probably had a little more money than you guys, but
it was a kick to do. I had fun doing it.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
It's a fun. Now, had either of you seen the Broadway show that was based on from the 60s?
No.
I did.
Okay, you
I
had
did.
Seen
you
it, so you had a reference point of it. You kind of were familiar
with
the songs.
But, you know, this is so, I don't know, even when things have been, even when things have been created before, because certainly Cinderella had been done by Julie Andrews, you know, in the 50s. But I don't, it's not helpful to me to reference what was done before. I have to create whatever it is I'm doing from my own.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of, that's exactly what I feel.
Yeah, yeah. I had to approach it as something entirely new and, you know, invent whatever we did, you know, as we did it.
Okay. Were either of you comic book kids growing up? Did either of you read comic
books?
Oh,
are you kidding me? I had... I'm telling you, I almost had a heart attack when my mother threw out all my comic books.
Another horror story. This has happened so many times on this show.
I mean, I would read 10 comic books a day in the summertime. I got to Columbia on Classics Illustrated.
Wow.
I'm not kidding, man. I read all of the classics in Classics Illustrated.
Wow. My comic books were Archie and Veronica and Betty.
You guys had everything I grew up on that.
Yeah,
and Superman and Batman. I mean, I had all of them, and I had really early editions of everything, you know, back in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, it broke my heart when that disappeared. But, yeah, big comic book fan here.
Okay, so you knew these characters. And then, Leslie, with you, with Lois Lane, because obviously even at the time, it's... even in the comic books at the time, sort of damsel in distress, but she had her own comic book for years, which was huge back then.
Right.
Were you,
you
kind
what?
Of a
I
Lois Lane?
That.
Oh, okay.
Didn't know that.
Were you a Lois Lane fan growing up at all? Did you have any influences, like maybe with a television show or anything like that?
No, I wasn't. I was not into superheroes, you know, even at that time, you know, Superman and all of that. No, I didn't. I was, you know, no.
But Archie, Betty, and Veronica, you got your comic book cred. You're fine. You're in a safe place here. It's all good. Look, I get a kick out of this thing. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. It is based on the Broadway show. Now we're coming into this. Did you Take us through the audition process of going for these roles. When did you find out about it? What was that process like? Because I'm guessing this thing was put together really, really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't remember auditioning. I know that Norman Twain knew me from Broadway. And we knew each other. You know, we actually had met many times, and he was very familiar with me from Broadway. I had done a Broadway show called Drat the Cat, and he was involved in that. And that I did that after Cinderella. And so I'm not even sure that I auditioned for it. I could have, but I don't remember.
Okay.
So I'm not going to be very
I did. Norman had, I guess somebody, I had done a production of Streetcar Named Desire with Sandy Dennis in Chicago not long before they auditioned me. But, you know, so he knew who I was. And my agent at the time, Jeff Hunter, set me up to do an audition, just walking up on stage. I had to take off my shirt and sing. You know, that was... Take off your shirt and sing, kid. Turn around, flex. And, you know, that was about it. And that's kind of where it came from.
Okay.
I mean, I'd been to the Playhouse, and they knew I could sing and move. They wanted to see me move and stuff like that. So it really was like one, I think it was, I auditioned once.
Oh, wow. Do you recall, like, how many people they brought in for Superman, or did they just see you and that was it?
I have no idea.
Okay. When was
it? That later on, you know, it's really interesting. Chris Reeve was a friend of mine. We did Gray Lady Down together. It was his first picture, too. So I had known him from that at Universal. But before he did, you know, after I did Superman, right, Donner was doing the first Superman. I went in to see Donner on that thing, and he didn't want to use another, you know, a Superman that had been used before. But Chris actually took some of the bits that we worked out in the TV thing, and used them later on. Remember the tie in the typewriter bit that we did?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he used that, and there was a couple of different things. And he thought, you know, he admitted to that. It was cool. I really liked Chris.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely did want to get into talking about Gray Lady Down a little bit, and it's interesting because both of you sort of have this relationship not only with the musical but with. You know, you have connections to the feature film as well.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time putting on the suit, David?
Do I remember? Yeah, I did. I do remember putting it on, and it was like very uncomfortable. But you know, they didn't do any of the body armor stuff that they do now. You know, I mean, it was just me in that silly suit.
Pure Wilson.
And, yeah, and it was kind of weird, and you know. But when I put it on, I actually, you know, you feel bigger. You start to grow into the suit.
Right.
The funny thing about the suit was that we did green screen, but at that point it was still blue screen, and they didn't realize it was a blue suit, and I had a blue eyes, so they keyed out the blue in my eyes so that they could get the suit, but then it looked like I had holes in my head. So they had to go to green. And that's where green screen actually started to happen.
Oh wow!
You know, they had to key out a different color. They had to find a shade of green that was very unlikely to be used, and we managed to get through it that way. And of course, my flying was on a table on wheels. You know, it's like
especially when the two of you are flying together.
Yeah.
It's sort of that, yeah. We can kind of see like you know that you're on a table there. Now you mentioned the voice. Okay, so take us through that little process there about finding the voice. And I was curious as to whether or not you were influenced by Bud Collier because you kind of have that Clark Kent thing going up here, and then it's Superman, and then you go down there.
Yeah.
Some actors do it, some don't. Bud Collier was famous for doing that, radio shows and
yeah.
the cartoons. What were your influences, and how did you find that voice?
Well, I actually started in radio. My first, when I was going to the neighborhood playhouse, we couldn't take paying jobs. So I worked for BAI, and we would do all of these. I did a thing called The Radio on Friday nights. It was a radio serial drama. It was Doctor Strange. So I had to play all of these different characters where I played, you know, I played the great Dormammu, this is the evil spirits, right? And then I had to play a guy kind of talk like this, you know. So I liked messing with, you know, vocal modulation and different, using different tones and things. I just made a choice to, you know, that Clark was a little bit up here and hi, Lois, and how you doing? And, you know, Superman is Superman.
Okay, so Marvel and DC Universe. So you got to do a little Doctor Strange then, too, early on.
I did. Wow. I did. We had a guy, Charlie Potter, was the producer on that thing. And we did all the sound effects, and we'd work all night on Friday nights to get a radio show together.
Is it out there anywhere? Can we hear this anywhere?
I haven't. Yeah, I'm sure it is out there in the somewhere in the media universe.
Okay, I
haven't looked for it. I also did a thing where I played five characters called the Chocolate Maltese Falcons, where I played the men and the women.
Oh man!
Wow.
Oh
yeah. Hi, big boy. You're so cute.
Don't touch me, lady. You know.
Oh man! So a lot of those radio chops coming into play then too.
Yeah, it was. That's really what it was. And, I dug it.
Okay, so Leslie, you obviously musical background, dancing background. Take us through you shot this in what, three, 4 days total, I think?
Didn't we rehearse it for
Yeah, I was wondering, like what were the rehearsals, though? What were the rehearsals like, and how much time did you guys actually have to get the show together?
Did David remember that?
Was it Jack Regas was the director, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so didn't we rehearse it 4 days and shoot it on the fifth day?
Is that true? I thought we rehearsed
yeah,
it longer, but I could be completely
Yeah, Jack Regas, director, he was a choreographer for a couple of Elvis films. Interestingly enough, he went on to direct some Electra Woman and Dinah Girl, some of our favorite Saturday morning shows, too.
Wow.
Did we rehearse it for longer than Leslie? I don't even remember the rehearsal.
But, you know, it could just be...
Might have been a week before. We might have rehearsed
it. I thought it was
a
week or something, you know.
And then we shot it in the second week.
Yeah.
That's probably what it was, yeah.
Do you recall any challenges that you ran into or just things that you really had to work hard to get down?
No, for me, in rehearsal, I think my own sort of concern about finding the tone, you know, finding the right sort of comedic, satirical but real tone of it all, you know, was or spoof, if you will, you know, was on my mind a lot. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as if it was stressful. You know, it was just how do I find the right tone for this? You know, to really work because it's it wasn't what I was usually doing.
Mm-hmm. Was there any like going to the comics to find out like what the dynamic was between Lois and Clark, or did you just rely strictly on the director?
Well, I relied strictly on the script and okay. the director and the fantastic chemistry
between you and Superman, because you had no idea he was there as Clark.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I was the guy with the tie and the typewriter.
Right.
But an odd moment, too, because in a very odd moment, I don't know if this part of it was in the Broadway, because this is really the only record that I've seen that we have is the 1975 ABC special. But the number with Loretta Swit, and let's talk about the cast, too. The number with Loretta Swit where you're coming in, you've got possibilities. It's almost like at that point, Lois then starts to see Clark after he starts going with another woman.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How difficult was that to play? Because you, Leslie, and you go right from he doesn't exist, you have no idea he's even there, to completely falling madly in love with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the way it happened.
In real life. Okay, let me ask you about a quote then, because that may put some context to the quote. About a quote that you have in the documentary, The Amazing Story of Superman.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, so this might put some of this into context with David's comment there. You said that David was wonderful to work with and that you had a little crush on each other, which was perfect. It worked out well for the piece. I'm going to go ahead and play investigative journalist on this one. Can you please elaborate on that statement?
No.
Yeah.
No. Do you want to go ahead and elaborate? I'll kill you. But go ahead.
I
enjoyed the babysitting.
Okay.
What?
I enjoyed the babysitting. You remember that time I babysit for Chris and Joshua?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, I do. That was a kick.
That
was great.
No.
Okay, so it's safe to say that the chemistry went a little bit beyond just the actual shooting for the...
We had great chemistry.
You did?
We had a great time doing it and working with each other.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's always better when you like the people you're working with.
Yes, and that's so not always the case. Trust me.
It is often not
yes,
the case.
Yes.
Pretty good set. then with all with everybody together. I mean, you've got the great David Wayne, as we mentioned, Loretta Swit, Kenneth Mars. I mean, the comedy on this.
I'm sorry, what?
No, the comedy on this with Kenneth Mars. I mean, coming out of the Mel Brooks films too. I mean, this was just this was really a funny set.
Yeah.
Oh, we had Mr. Betty White too. We had Alan Ludden was in it, and I mean, it was quite a cast. It was amazing, and I went to school with Melissa Wayne.
Did Betty show up?
Betty did show up one day. I don't, you know, she was there for like a few minutes. I don't know if she was dropped in and dropped out, but I liked Alan. Alan was cool.
Yeah,
he was a good
Perry.
Yeah,
it was a great supporting cast. Was it? Terrific?
It was. We had a good time.
And one scene I really enjoyed, and Leslie, that you're in, and I, look, Scarlett Johansson, she takes out a room full of bad guys while tied to a chair. You perform a show-stopping musical number while tied to a chair. I have no idea which one is more difficult.
Yeah.
How
more
do you?
Speed. Truly more my speed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that the more challenging thing of just trying to sing and dance while tied to
dance
a chair?
Dance with a chair on?
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was an interesting challenge. Yeah, it was unique.
You...
I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed... I love musicals. I love musicals. And anytime I get to sing or dance, you know, which is so rare now, you know, I leap all over it. I jump all over it. So the whole experience was, you know, kind of a treasure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it was, it's really someplace special that I held, you know, that it was, and it was really the first job I had in Hollywood. So,
wow,
you know,
that's amazing.
Right off the bat, The Man of Steel.
Yep,
wow,
that was
that's
it.
Fantastic.
And I loved where we worked. We were at Selznick Studios. I had Clark Gable's dressing room from Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
I was going to ask where you shot
incredible.
It.
That's incredible. I didn't even know that. Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this was all shot at Selznick Studios then?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know
that. Yeah, well, and it was a real downtime for Selznick at that point. I mean, he was really on the downswing. Right after that, they went in there with you know, I guess later Michael Jackson did some music videos there, and Beetlejuice was shot there. But at that point, it was pretty low tide for the Selznick.
Wow.
Okay. Now, did they ever talk about including like a laugh track or applause track or anything like that? Because it's kind of difficult because it's a Broadway show. You do these huge numbers, and then it kind of stops. And at the time, there was so much laugh tracks like were on everything at the time. Did they ever talk about doing that, or was it just
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, they didn't
I don't either. I mean, the new musicals that are done on ABC, you know, the musicals that that they're making, Peter Pan and Gypsy, etc. I don't believe that they have laugh tracks or applause tracks or any of that. And I think it works, you know, it's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised. In 75, it just seemed like everything was like that, especially with, you know, all the, you
but
know, different shows.
Norman came from a Broadway background. So I think,
theater background,
purist.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think he wanted to keep the feeling of a production, you know.
Exactly.
Production.
Okay. Now, I don't typically talk about roles that actors and actresses didn't get, but I think as we've alluded to, this might be the exception to the rule today. Since you both played these parts, I have to talk a little bit about Superman the movie. David, you mentioned you were with the great Christopher Reeve in Grey Lady Down, Charlton Heston.
Right.
Great flick. So this, you were shooting that, I guess the year before Superman came out.
Right.
So
right.
He hadn't been cast at that point, or had he been cast at that point?
No, he hadn't been cast at that point.
Okay.
Chris on Grey Lady, you know, weighed about 175 pounds. I guess he had just come out of Yale, and he was like
wow.
Bone thin, man. He was.
Yeah.
They had to beef him up something terrible. It was like amazing. The transformation that he made from Grey Lady to do this Superman part. He gained about 50 pounds.
Yeah, all muscle. But yeah, David Prowse, who played Darth Vader, put him through his paces and got him to that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Take us back to that time. Now, so did you audition at all for Superman, or was it the fact that you had known early on?
I met with Dick.
You actually met with Richard Donner, okay.
Yeah, and we sat and we talked about, you know, about the whole thing. And he just said to me, he said, listen, you know, I enjoyed what you did, but you know, I'm probably not going to, this isn't probably going to go any further. And I really appreciated that, too. He was kind of a very frank character. You know, he was an interesting guy.
Okay. So, and you had told him, had he seen it? Had he actually seen?
Yeah, he had.
Okay. Yeah, it's a weird time because now we look at comic book movies and it's completely different. Take us back to that time, especially, Leslie, with yours. because we get to see your actual audition. It's on the DVDs, and you talk about it, and they interviewed you about it. How strange is that for you to kind of watch these things being revealed? And how did – take us through your process of going from one to the other.
Well, I was in Chicago doing Vanities, a play with Elizabeth Ashley, and I got this call from my manager that they wanted to do a screen test, and they wanted to fly me to London to do it, which is where they were doing all their screen tests. And, you know, I was really excited, and I went off to London, and I did this screen test, and I knew that I certainly knew other people were testing, and all wonderful actresses, you know. Then I went back to Chicago to do the finish, you know, to finish the run, and I found out that I didn't get it, and I was devastated, and you know, crying and beside myself, and you know, the show must go on. I had to continue doing the play, and it was very interesting because I was then asked, while I was in the play, after that experience, I was asked to come to L.A. to screen test for a miniseries called 79 Park Avenue, and I came and I did the same thing. I, you know, did my screen test, flew back to Chicago. But this time, when I got off the plane, they were, you know, paging me, and I got on the phone, and they said that I had gotten the role, and they bought me out of the rest of my contract in the play because I had to fly home, like go pack and get right home back to L.A. and I ended up, you know, winning the Golden Globe Award for Best Actress. And I, you know, I really feel like what's meant to be yours is yours, and what isn't, isn't, you know. And for me, the ultimate sort of turnaround of that other piece ended up being, you know, kind of a career changer for me in a lot of ways. And so it started me on a whole new path with a, you know, new agent and all of that stuff after winning the award, which, you know, propelled me into doing a whole bunch of movies that I loved. So, you know, you just don't, it's always disappointing, or for me it is, you know, when I really want something. But I do believe that, you know, what is meant to be yours will show up as long as you're, you know, of right mind and body. You know what I mean?
Well, we've heard that a bunch of times, especially when you talk about these iconic characters, because it's almost like a two-edged sword. It's, you get it, but then is there typecasting involved? Are you just Lois Lane for the rest of your life then?
Well, you certainly identify strongly. Yeah.
Well, you think about Star
Trek.
Very,
very identified. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Star Wars and a lot of these huge roles. But then, you know, is it – and well, Jonathan Frakes was on the show, and he quoted Leonard Nimoy at one point and said, better to be typecast than not cast at all. So, I guess, it, you know, as an actor, I guess you go back and forth.
I work with John Jonathan. I like working with Jonathan Banks. He's quite a character, that guy.
Oh, he's incredible.
Well, I actually had a very interesting experience after Superman, because they had dyed my hair black, and the part of the contract was that they would return my hair to its normal color, but instead they turned it to copper. I mean, they stripped out my hair so badly, it was like, you remember that?
Yes.
Did you see? You saw me after that, right? They stripped out my hair so bad. I mean, it was like, I'm talking about flaming copper. So there was a role. I was up for Howard Hughes, actually, that Tommy Lee did. And I went to see Joyce Selznick at Universal. She came in, and I had a headshot that was taken at the time. But you couldn't, obviously, it were black and white, so you couldn't see how copper the hair really was.
Oh, my God.
But my eyes, it was taken against the white wall, so my eyes were, like, glowing, you know. And so she said, I just had to see what you look like in person. You're not even right for this role, but I just had to see what you look like.
At least Christopher Reeve got to wear a wig.
When I walked in the room, I tell you, the first response was, whoa.
God, that's hilarious.
I mean, it was orange before Bowie got there. Yeah, we're taking Ziggy Stardust here, you know?
Now, Leslie, you had mentioned one time, too, even in these auditions and coming from a stage background and then even taking a Broadway show to television like that, you have to kind of find this mix because you go much bigger on stage, right?
Was
that tough in the audition of trying to, because you already did Lois, but a much bigger Lois. Was that
It's a Bird's Plane?
Yeah, was that a challenge coming in, and how did you Was that going through your mind in the audition?
That's what I meant about trying to find the right tone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
It was, you know, to meet the sort of, you know, high styled spoof nature of the piece,
right?
And then also infuse it with a kind of realism, you know, that would work.
Yeah, it's really a style piece, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you have to work. You know, you have to. Find that, and that takes a minute and a half. You know, you work on that, and so that was the challenge. That was the challenge, but it was kind of great.
Yeah, interesting thing. You know, Meisner used to say all the time that he didn't believe in anything, any difference in the acting, where the acting came from, for stage or television or film.
Totally
what he believed in was that you automatically, based on the energy of the venue in which you're performing,
that's right,
would come up. It would match the energy that was in the, you know, with the character.
Yep.
So, you know, it really was generated by the venue. The venue in a 2,600-seat house with a 50-foot proscenium is a different energy that you're filled with than you are when you're in front of a camera, a 35-millimeter with a box frame on it. You know,
there's
2,600 people out there with their energy, and then there's maybe 50 or 60 in a you know, stage setting with me on the other side of the camera. You sense all of that. You feel all of that, but you know, you're governed really by the scope of the venue that you're performing in.
And it had to be incredibly difficult in 77 because, like we said, there wasn't much coming into that. There was a reference point. Donner had taken that in a completely different direction. He went like hyper real and the verisimilitude in it. The reference point for actors and actresses, I think, coming in was comic books and four color adventures and Batman, Biff, Bow, Bam. So. Yeah, it had to be almost impossible at that point.
Think about it. Each one of those cells is a frame. You know, that's...
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just... You've got a matte frame.
It had to be difficult at that point. In the past decade or so, there have been several revivals of the Broadway show. It's coming back now. Have either of you seen the latest versions of it?
No, I haven't.
I haven't either.
Okay.
I wasn't even aware of that, but, you know, I'm sure that they're, you know, it's out there.
It's they changed it up. They wrote some new songs. They changed the story up a little bit, made it a little bit more contemporary. So, yeah, I'm just kind of curious. Now, so we've seen just about every version of this character, of these two characters, over the past three quarters of a century plus. What is it about these characters that is just everlasting?
I think it's the goodness in them. You know, I just think that people want to associate with the, you know, something that's good and pure and honest. You know, and that those characters represent that at their best.
I also think that, you know, Lois Lane is sort of a feminist. You know, she's got this she's ahead of her time. You know, she's
way ahead of her time.
You know, she's a working woman, young working woman, who's in a predominantly male world and doing what used to be considered to be only a man's job, you know, and she's assertive and, you know.
And she's kind of that Roz Russell front page.
Exactly.
Oh, the
right,
front page.
Exactly. Yeah.
That kind
and
of fast talking.
Right. But she's sort of romantic in her heart, you know, so she's a great combination of factors for young women. And I think in that way, it's a kind of a, you know, an iconic sort of an ideal for young women to ascribe to, you know.
Thoughts on the current Lois and Clark, Henry Cavill and Amy Adams?
Different, very different.
You know, they're totally different interpretation of what we were working on. So
yeah, God knows.
Do you enjoy it? I mean, it's obviously taken a much. It's a little bit different. Obviously, taking a darker tone. There's been criticism since the movie's
darker world.
Yeah. What do you guys think of the darker tone that Superman and Lois Lane at this point are kind of taking?
Well, you know, it's a different time. It's a whole different time. You know, what worked in that era wouldn't work now. You know, it's. Especially younger people's attention span is very different.
I mean, you know, the internet and all of the modern media age has completely changed the game enormously.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people are looking for bits. rather than, you know, and if they can, you can assemble enough of them together in an interesting and informative and impactful way, that's what they're shooting for. And, you know, I think that that started kind of more with Batman, you know, and the success of that franchise in that direction kind of pulled it in that direction, you know.
Well, who knows? Amy Adams has a musical background. Maybe she'll break out in a song in the next flick. What do you think?
She does have a musical background. She's great.
You know, Superman gets a little too dark, and Amy Adams has a rockin' musical number. Never know. Supergirl, the producers of Supergirl, they love to go back and mine actors and actresses who have been in these roles before. In The Flash, we've seen it in Arrow and a lot of these different things. Would either of you be up for a role in Supergirl if the phone rang up?
Are they paying?
I think they do. It just got renewed. I guess there's probably a check involved, I would think.
There you go.
Would you be interested in doing something like that, or, you know, is kind of popping into this the new superhero world?
You know, it would depend on what it is. I mean, you know,
depends on what it is.
Sure. You know, it still boils down to actors will work for nothing if they got a great script.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you got a great part, you got something that really resonates with you in some way. Even if it's a small thing, if you find something in there of value for yourself to cultivate in a role, I would do it. You know.
Yeah,
but it would have to be right.
I'm going to be doing a short film. I've never done a short film before. I love this script so much. There's obviously no money or very little money, but I don't care. Because it's a beautiful role, and I really like the director, and, you know, it's always dependent on the material for me.
Really, I mean, Schwarzenegger just did Maggie last year; he didn't get paid anything, and he did, and you know, some of his best work, I think. You know, he did a film last year, just based on the script, and you know, if the material's there, we're drawn to human experience. We're the ultimate social scientists. That's kind of our job, study human behavior and connect it to something of value in life. And so wherever that shows up in content, that's what we're looking for.
Well, you know? Speaking on behalf of the fans, we hope to get to see you both in that world at some point as well. Current projects, Leslie, and you mentioned a film that you're working on. What are some of the things that you're doing? What can fans expect from you coming up?
I did a three episode arc on a show called Blunt Talk with Sir Patrick Stewart.
That will be on in,
and that will be on in, I think it's their second season, so it's on Stars, and I believe it comes on in the summer, I'm not sure, but, and then I'm doing this short film called Crying that we start filming in July.
But he's got a crazy sense of humor, doesn't he? Like,
very, very offbeat, yeah.
You just don't see it in a lot of his work, but I think in that series you get to see a lot of
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, he's very rarely asked to do that kind of work, so he's loving every second of it. Yeah.
And David, what are you up to right now?
Well, we've got a film that we've been working on for a while, actually. We started a while back. It's called Collar that I did. It's about a cop who shoots a black kid and causes an uprising in the community.
Is this with Rebecca De Mornay? You know,
with Rebecca and Tom Sizemore. Excellent. And Richard Roundtree, actually. And we've been working on getting it out. We had a real tough time getting it into distribution, but it's going to go out this fall. Because people said nobody's interested in the topic of cops killing black kids and causing uprisings. But it never happens. That's when we finished it. Actually, we won an award in the first festival that we were in, and we're told, well, it's a great film, but nobody's going to care.
Wow.
That's
crazy.
That's why we made the film.
It,
you know,
David.
Huh?
Who directed it? Oh, great! Fabulous.
Yeah, I wrote it and directed it.
This is written and directed by. So, yep, you are putting these things out. Man, it's so nice to
see.
And
I'm really proud. I'm really proud of the work. I really loved working with the people. I love working with Tom Sizemore. I mean, as wacky as the guy is, sometimes he's just a joy to work with in terms of an actor. When he steps on a set, man, I'm telling you, it's like, you know. He's the kind of actor I really love to work with. Just let it go and let it flow, you know. And I really enjoyed that. And Rebecca, too. I mean, I loved working with everybody in the cast. It was a great cast. My son was in it. He's one of the producers, and he plays a character in it. And so I got to work with him. That was really amazing.
Oh, that's great.
You guys,
I look forward to it.
You guys always find these incredible casts to work with, and they obviously have incredible talents in both of you to work with.
Yeah, you see, that's the other part of it. It's like we're this traveling circus, you know? I mean, it's like it's a carnival that picks up players wherever you go. It's an amazing profession in that you come together for a while to create something of real value, and you, that's what you want to create. And if you have that experience, and it's then it's over, and you move on. We're like gypsies, you know.
Right. Totally.
And it's a beautiful thing in a lot of ways, you know.
And but your stuff lives on YouTube. We get to watch it forever and ever and ever. It never goes away.
You know, that was amazingly, that was my goal when I was at Columbia. I had a roommate. He was a wild guy named Robert Hoffman. And Robert and I came up with one night. We were up all night doing an all-nighter. And he says, what do we want out of life? And mine was, I wanted to become immortal and then die.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And after I did my first film, I realized I just had.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that kind of frees you up after that.
That's out there. Yeah. Are you guys out there on social media? I know, Leslie Ann, you're at the Leslie Warren on Twitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So any of these projects we can find out, you're going to be
tweeting. She is the Leslie Warren, too.
Yes, she is. And a Funnier Die little video. You just posted that, I think, the other day, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
I love watching
that. Yeah, it's just so funny. It's the second one I did for Comedy Central, and the first one I did was with Marion Cotillard and Taraji P. Henson. It was also very, very
from Person of Interest.
I mean, her big thing is Empire.
She's on Empire now, but I loved her on Person of Interest, so that was one of my favorites.
She's
she's great. Oh, great. Yeah. And David, are you out there on social media, or are you flying under the radar as the Man of Steel?
I'm actually on Twitter at D. Willie Boy Wonder, number one, D-E-R. D. Willie Boy Wonder. And I'm all, you know, I'm on Facebook too. You can find me under David Wilson. I'm not hiding from anybody anywhere.
You know, friends with the Man of Steel?
Anybody can.
Nice.
You know, that's part of the deal.
We can be friends with the Man of Steel. We can be friends with Lois Lane. You know, it's a whole different world out there now. You know, and
it is.
Like you said, we get to connect with you guys out there too. Leslie, I know you're posting Clue stuff all the time out there too. So for fans, we love that movie as well.
People still just love that movie. It's so great.
It's one
classic.
Of my favorites.
It's classic. And I think in my city, I think I got the one where you did it. So spoiler alert, all these years later. I tell you what, Leslie Ann, David, amazing job all those years ago adapting the Broadway show to television. That was super. To use a cliche about it, I thank you both so much for reuniting today on Comic Book Central.
Well, thanks for reuniting us. It's been a real pleasure, Leslie.
Yeah, it's great to talk
to you. Still love you, honey. You're great.
I know. Thank you.
It's just
back
great.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, kiddo.
It's
Lois
and Clark together again. Making
there
dreams out here. We love it here on Comic Book Central. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, David.
Bye-bye.
There you have it, folks. The Super Reunion you are not going to hear anywhere else. Do not keep it to yourself. Get out there on social media. Share the lair. Hashtag share the lair. Share this episode on Facebook. Retweet it on Twitter. Wherever else you happen to be online. Get on those message boards. Tell people about it. This was a rare gem today. Love chatting with Leslie Ann and David. And revisiting It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. By the by, some of you listeners might remember that a couple of years ago, I reached out to Bob Holliday, who, as I mentioned earlier, starred as Clark Kent's Superman in the original Broadway show. As I mentioned at the time, he's not up for recorded interviews these days. He did send along a message to his fan. I read it on the show a while back, but just talking about this whole production today on this episode, it seemed like a good time to read it again for you listeners who didn't catch it the first time around. So when I contacted Bob Holliday, he wrote back, he said, "To all my fans, if you saw me on Broadway, thank you for being there. If you never saw me, but you heard me on the Superman cast album, thanks for the listen. If I met you in Metropolis, Illinois for the Superman celebration, what a thrill. For everyone, I appreciate beyond words that you remember me. I loved my time as Superman, and I am grateful to you all." So, great words, great guy. I thought it was pretty awesome he took the time to write back, so just wanted to bring that back a little bit for you listeners out there. You can find out more about Bob Holliday's time as Superman, his career. You can check out the website, supermanbobholliday.com. I highly recommend it. Go check it out. Now, for the 1975 television special that we've been revisiting today, man, I'm telling you what, I'm hoping this gets a DVD release at some point. We think about the folks at Warner Archive, WBShop.com. I've mentioned them on the show. They've got some really cool stuff out there. Tons of great DVD box sets to be had. I'm doing some digging right now as to why this television special's never had an official DVD release. Look, this seems like a kind of thing they would give an official release. I mean, yeah, it's kind of cheesy, but, you know, cheesy superhero shows haven't stopped them before. We got that official DVD release of Legends of the Superheroes we talked about for several episodes. Well, what I'm gathering right now is there might be some sort of rights issues, and that would totally make sense. As, you know, when you think about something like this that has all that music in it, a lot of celebrity guest stars, sometimes you run into that. Not unheard of. You know, we think about Spider-Man, the animated series we talked about a few episodes back. The Batman 66 series, man, that took, what, 50 years to get an official release? So they finally cleared up those legal issues. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll just have to wait 10 more years for this one. Until we can actually give them our money for an official release, it's really not that tough to find online. You can go check it out. It is silly fun. And it is a really cool time capsule that takes us right up to the Superman movie in the 70s. So it kind of bridges that gap between the campy comic book stuff and then the serious take that Donner did. It's a really cool time capsule. Fun stuff. My thanks to Leslie Ann and David for taking some time today. Getting back together again after all these years and reuniting right here in Comic Book Central. That was fun. Also, you heard David mention the Doctor Strange radio show he did back in the day. I did a little bit more digging, a little bit more homework. Someone actually has a bunch of those episodes on two CDs. I'm going to put that link in the show notes as to how you can get those. You can listen to them. I'm not sure if David's episodes are on those CDs. One interview I saw with the producer that said that I believe David voiced the second half of the batch of 17 episodes that were produced. So I don't know if these seven that are on these CDs are David's episodes, but I'm going to put that link in the show notes for this episode on my website, comicbookcentral.net. Again, everything you're going to find there. To keep up with Leslie, Ann, and David online, you can check them out on Twitter. Those links will be in the show notes as well. Links for the Raiders of the Lost Ark event at the Gateway Film Center here in Columbus, Ohio. The national tour, the IndieCast, everything we talked about today. It's all waiting for you there. comicbookcentral.net. Don't forget to head on over to Comic Book Central on Facebook, Twitter, Facebook, it's facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, Twitter at comicbookctrl. Try to snag yourself those free Raiders passes for Columbus, Ohio. Links to the social network pages are on the website, as is a link to subscribe to Comic Book Central on iTunes. If you do that, please leave a review. Always appreciate that. If you like what you're hearing, man, how could you not love what you're hearing after today's reunion? There's a lot of great stuff going on here. So get on iTunes, subscribe to the show, leave a review, tell me what you think. Let other people know how great the show is, how much you're enjoying it, how cool these super reunions are. Blueberry Stitcher, if you're not on iTunes, we're on those services as well. Drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net. Get me your guest ideas, just like Ernest did. Man, who knows? The reunion you have longed for, it could happen right here on Comic Book Central. You never know. Let me know what you think. All right, kiddies, that is it for today. I'm going to go put the karaoke machine on, practice some super show tunes. But not to worry, I will be back before you know it, because next week on Comic Book Central, I'm going to keep this Superman theme going. It is the 10th anniversary of the film Superman Returns. That's the film that brought the Richard Donner era Man of Steel back to the big screen in 2006. From the film Superman Returns, he played Jimmy Olsen. He's also been a werewolf. He's been a fanboy. Actor Sam Huntington will be here for a celebration of Superman Returns. I hope you will return as well. Until then, keep singing and dancing. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Unported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
What a man!
Thank heaven for Superman!
We need him!
Accusations.
A world of cheap sensations. A world with no foundations. That's all we need him.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, we did.
that was mugging Uncle Meyer.
Saved him from the fog, yes he did. And when a bad situation goes by, we need him. We need him. Yes, we do. We need him.
He brings the orphans Christmas turkey.
Christmas turkey, yes he does. Yes, he does.
He flew my asthmatic son to Albuquerque. When the world morals stand is grimurky,
we need him.
We need him.
I need him.
They need me.
In this world of moral decay, we need him. We need him. In the world of evil and doubt, in these times of misery and crimes, we need him. We need him. We need him.
Stay tuned for Chapter 2, Merchant of Doom.